How many subscribers do you have on YouTube, by the way?
It is at 140,000.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I think when we met, it was at like 2,000.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I can't believe I was friends with such a small YouTube.
I know. Hey, you were kind of...
I'm joking.
You were still the Saradici, but you've grown so much more since. Because then that was when you were vlogging. So you weren't this tech connoisseur guru.
Right. It was a lot of vlogs. Back then it was
like just vlogging. You just had the RX100.
Yeah.
I had, like the same camera. We were just doing our little vlogs.
It was such good times. Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Saradici and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy. Guys, welcome to another episode of That Creative Life. We have the homie Brett Conti. I guess you could say we go back in terms of New York, because you were one of the first people who emailed me.
Yep.
Back in the day when I was checking my emails, so thank goodness I did.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I kind of want to talk to you about today is I want to start with skateboarding Brett, fortune Brett, because a lot of YouTubers are on this podcast and we dissect all of the things that have led them to get a following, which we'll get to eventually, but what's unique about you is you came from this world of skateboarding.
Right,
so thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
You know, you have this great following on the internet, but I think a lot of people who follow you on YouTube might not even know about Fortune, Brett.
It's true.
So can you give me a little bit of background on what you do day to day? And then we'll kind of like start with skateboarding, Brett. This is so exciting. I'm glad we get to chat.
Yeah. So I guess first the day to day. I mean, you know how the life is. It's so different, but I did used to have a space right down the hall on the same floor as you, Sarah, for about 6 months. Just got rid of it just since it's so cold now that I want to do some traveling to warmer places. But yeah, I got into YouTube and filmmaking and videoing from skateboarding. Because as you know, if you land a cool trick, it didn't happen unless you filmed it. So it was always about making the dopest videos. And even when I first started skateboarding wasn't cool at all. So why I wanted to start filming it was so I could put in my AIM profile and show kids in elementary school, like fifth grade, that I'm a legit skateboarder.
Well, I have to ask you what your username was.
Brett Rock the House.
Mine was Chick22 Sarah.
Nice.
So
we should put that bold as like our Instagram handle now.
Yes. Oh, that is so funny. So what would you link there? How would you show people videos back in the day?
You could have a profile and you could put a link there. So like link it to my YouTube channel.
Oh, so it was YouTube.
2006 when YouTube first came out. I had a YouTube channel. It's like me at the skate park. And I would like make these videos with my friends, and it was like obviously fun doing it, but I remember like putting it in my profile because kids used to make fun of me at that time, like, oh, skater boy.
See, I just started to understand how it wasn't cool, because right now it is so cool.
Yeah.
But John was telling me literally, I think just 2 days ago, how certain people would be scared to be called gay. Because back in the day, everyone would be like, grr, you know, to everything. Yeah. Now, I think we've learned that that's not very nice. But I had no idea that such a sport that requires so much talent was considered to be that.
Yeah. I mean, it was had to do with like just Avril Lavigne skater boy song. And just you were this stereotypical person if you skateboarded.
Interesting.
The outside world didn't know that skateboarding has so many subgenres within it. You know, there's people that dress, you know, with baggy clothes, some that dress like the typical skater look, some that just are stylish.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't even dress like your typical skater that like hangs out at the mall, but still I was just like, skater boy now.
Because I guess there was some people who would use a skateboard deck as a prop,
mm-hmm.
would hang out in the mall, and that's where I guess the mall grabbing, you know, poser thing
exactly.
came from. So what made you fall in love with that when it wasn't cool?
I mean, my cousin got me into when I was like 5 years old, so I was always doing it. And then I wasn't doing it so much like as a little kid, like when I was like 10, but then come 13 or maybe even younger, like 12, I just started hanging out with my cousin again and like thought skateboarding was the coolest thing. And I loved challenging myself and going outside every day to learn a new trick. You know, I was playing other sports as every 11-year-old mm-hmm. is, but I love that I could just go in front of my house, practice tricks all day and master something. Mm-hmm. And that's taught me, I think, the entrepreneur mindset and also this creative mindset and just not having a coach or boss telling you what to do. And that's what I love about skateboarding. that you could just do it all yourself. You could even film yourself. You could put my little tripod up with my camcorder. And I think that's what made me fall in love with skateboarding initially.
Hmm. And you grew up in Long Island, right?
Yep, Strong Island.
Strong Island. Oh, why do people call it Strong Island? Is that
only the people from it call it that. Okay. No one else calls it that.
I mean, you're like a New Yorker then.
That's true.
You've been here.
But so I was born a little bit upstate, like 30 minutes upstate in Suffern. Probably never heard of it. Small town. Mm-hmm. But I think anything above the city is considered a upstate.
Okay, gotcha.
But my parents got divorced when I was like a year old. Mm-hmm. My mom moved to Long Island, and then like my dad was living in the city, and even my mom lived in the city before. So I was in the city every single weekend though, visiting my dad. Hmm. So I always got to see what, you know, Times Square looked like in, you know, the early 90s. Wow. Like when I was first born as a little kid, I remember going to Times Square and like Bryant Park, which were just drugs everywhere, prostitutes. I remember being a little kid, be like, New York is a scary place.
Wow. Well, yeah, you watch these documentaries of, you know, even in the 70s, that's when it really started, and it was just so sketchy. And it's interesting when people today call it sketchy and talk about the homeless problem and stuff. Yeah. I'm like,
New York is so funny.
First of all, have you been to downtown LA?
Yeah.
And because they'll compare those two places and think they're the same. And New York is so just good.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's so safe, you know? So growing up, like, did you go in the city and skate? Did you street skate? Is that why? Was there a moment where you were wondering if, oh, I'll do maybe transition or maybe street skating? Or was it always street skating because you're in New York?
Yeah, I was always street skating. And I was a little kid. I would come in, you know, by myself or with my friends when I was like 13 years old to meet up with other kids in other cities. And we would meet up here and go skate all day. But it wasn't until a few years later that like I really fell in love with the city. Mm-hmm. Because at the time I was still transitioning. We had Mayor Giuliani, who really cleaned up the city.
Right.
And from there, like once it started getting cleaner and safer, that's when I was like, this is the greatest city in the world. But I remember as a little kid where I was a little afraid of it.
So what was the first moment where you realize that you're good at skating and you can, because we'll get into you went to college for finance and
stuff.
Which is so fascinating. But what was the moment that, oh, I'm good at this. Maybe I can make this a part of my job somehow.
I mean, when I realized at the skate park, I was better than everyone else. But I think at that time, you know, there was no like real social media back then. Like there was Facebook, even MySpace, like AIM. But I would still like make these videos and put them out. And you had that like little recognition when I would go to a skate park and other little, you know, kids would be like, whoa, like I've seen your video part or stuff like that. And I think then that's when I was like, whoa, that's crazy that people have seen my skateboarding.
Yeah.
So I guess that's when I realized I started doing contests. That's actually how I met your lovely boyfriend.
Yes.
John was in Atlanta. We were at a contest and John crushed it. John got like second place. And I remember I was like, dang, for someone so good, I'm surprised he's so nice. Because usually skateboarders are assholes. So I was just like, damn, that guy's so cool. And like, he's so good at skateboarding. Like, why is he this friendly?
Yeah. It was so funny when we started hanging out. And then I would talk about friends or people who I know. And so casually, you would come up. Casually, Ty Moss would come up. And he was like, what? How do you know these people? And the more people I talk to, especially if it has to do with New York, skateboarding has such a tight relation to the creative community, I think. And maybe it has to do with filming. All skateboarders have to, you know, they learn how to use that DSLR, learn how to film, what's a fisheye. There's that intro in the creative world. So when you were in high school, what was going through your head when you decided to go to college for business, for finance? I'm going to be a finance bro because I'm in New York.
No. So when I was in high school, I used to tell my family, I was like, I'm not going to college. I want to be a professional skateboarder. I want this more than anything. And then my dad just kind of convinced me. Not like actually, he was like, you're going to college. But he like just played it off and like signed me up pretty much and had me send the application. And then I was like, all right, like I'll give this a try. At least I'll leave in the city because I went to Manhattan College. And then I think it was the movie Wall Street, the first one, not the one with Shia LaBeouf, but the original one with whoever that was, Charlie Sheen,
Gordon
maybe?
Gekko? Or, oh.
Was it Charlie Sheen, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes.
So I remember seeing that movie, and what I loved about finance was that I thought that I could be like a stockbroker and beat the market and work remotely, because at that point I knew I wanted to travel. I wanted to be my own boss, I guess. So does everyone. But yeah. I was like, all right, maybe with finance I could do this, get a degree, make my family happy, and I could still like work my own hours and hopefully just trade stocks all day. So I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's always been a desire then to be your own boss.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I could be employed now, especially after having the taste of the freedom that we have, like having our own offices, doing our own hours. Mm. I don't think I could go back to working for someone now.
Oh, the fact that, because some days I'll be up till 3 editing, and then I'll just wake up at 11 or 12. Yeah. And that's just how it goes sometimes. And sometimes I'll have to wake up early, but you can control things, right? Did you finish college? So you
I did, yeah, okay. All 4 years.
And I'm curious, how much was it?
Oh, the school?
Yeah.
It was, oof.
Do you still have loans from it?
Yeah, but it's not much. Like, I honestly,
because I guess
like
you
8,000 left, but it was, the school initially was like $45,000 a year, but then I had like some scholarship and then I had financial aid.
Okay.
So I think out of pocket, like when I was done, I only had to pay like 15 grand.
Okay. Yeah. That's
so it's
much
like
better than the horse
compared to other people that have a $250,000 in debt. Yeah. So
and,
it was.
In last podcast, I was talking to Joe Franco about going to school in Manhattan. And even though it was so expensive, she got the same benefit as a lot of people do who do maybe not go to college, but you know, they pack up and go to a big city to experience the culture and get internships that wouldn't be, you know, in random cities, because New York is so unique. So it's like, if you're gonna send it, you might as well send it in Manhattan, man.
It's
like
true.
you're gonna learn. Did you have any wacky internships?
Yeah, so I interned at Morgan Stanley.
Oh,
I know, and that's what made me realize. I was like, wait, this is not
Screw
for me.
This.
It told me, I was like, this is not the life I want to do, because the guy who I interned for, he was a good friend of my dad who also went to Manhattan College where I went. So the guy like wanted to take me under his wing, and this was before Wolf of Wall Street came out, and this guy was literally the Wolf of Wall Street.
Wow.
He was greatest guy ever, but he was like, you need to have a girlfriend at every school. He's like, you need your NYU girl. He's like, you need your Manhattan College girl, your Fordham girl. Like, he was not like all in good manner though. Like, he was just like, he was like 50, still like only had a girlfriend, no kids. Like, so it was like such an interesting internship. And it wasn't him that made me not want to, you know, stick that through, but it was seeing where I could be in 10 years and 20 years, seeing these people throughout the office, Morgan Stanley, being like, okay, so if I put in 20 years of my life, I'm just going to be right where this guy is right now, who looks miserable. I mean, some people do like it. Don't get me wrong.
But it's very, is it hierarchical? Is that a word? Is it similar to people who study law, where you have to put in the time? Like, you can't be this genius who skips 4 levels of management. Like, there is only one process.
It depends where you're going. So I was in wealth management. So you need to become you have to pass all of your Series 7 tests, and that could take 2 years to pass. I have friends who are still in finance that are like, have failed it 3 times. So it's like,
and if you don't pass, you can't.
Then you're like, can't manage people's money, and like, you know, there's stuff like that that's really complicated with it. And especially if you want to work at a big company like Morgan Stanley, like you really have to go back to school. You have to go to Harvard. You have to get your MBA. You have to even take it further.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
you can't
like,
you can't stop at the 4 years. You can't just go get.
You could, and I guess there. I don't know. I was just the intern, so but from my understanding, I think that would be really hard. It's way harder to become a successful employee and like make it through the rat race, I think, than doing it yourself. Because I think
then
I'm
maybe
like,
just
dang,
building
if
a
I,
business.
If I didn't have this and say I needed money and, you know, needed to use my college degree, I was like, I'd only be making like 50, 60 grand a year in New York City. Like,
is that really what, is that the starting salary?
Yeah, I think at Morgan Stanley, the starting was like 50 to 60.
Interesting. And when you're, now I'm just going on a tangent because I'm very curious about this world, but when you are doing wealth management within a big company like that, is it the fees, is that going straight to the company and then you just, you have a consistent salary, or is there any type of like commission?
There's both.
Yeah. Because I wonder just how people stay motivated when they're handling other people's great sums of money and they're sitting in a desk in a dark Midtown office, you know.
Yeah.
Getting 50K a year.
Yeah, no, you do get the salary, but then you do get commissions and stuff on top of that. But I do remember them telling me that it would be impressive if you got one new client a year.
Really?
So it's that difficult to get new clients. And my job as the intern literally was, they told me the first day, they're like, all right, you're going to make 500 phone calls a day and don't pick up your head until then.
That's some like pursuit of happiness stuff right there.
So, I mean, I'm not going to lie.
So who
I did
were
like
you calling Brett.
So you had to call the top 1%, doctors, lawyers, anyone who has over $2 million in investable assets and had to get their money. But I was just, after the first week, like I was a little pumped up, you know, like they fire you up in the beginning where they're like, make it seem excited. And they're like, oh yeah, like, well, even as an intern, like, and I was getting paid for the internship, but not well. And they're like, oh, we'll even like do something and like give you a kickback if you get a client. So I was like so motivated the first week. And I was like, wait, this is horrible. I would go in every day just losing my mind. So I had like my own little corner section. So I was learning how to code. I was like still trying to use my time wisely, but I was like, I need to get out of this.
Yeah.
So I was like starting Fortune, my company. And I was like, I'm going to make a website. I'm going to somehow make it as an entrepreneur because I can't do this.
That is so fascinating. Were you using a phone book? How do you get these people's numbers?
It wasn't. I'm only a year older than you, Sarah.
But still to this day. So you were like white book listings online?
No. So they had, Morgan Stanley had like this thousands
of pages.
Like a ledger
of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's I didn't have to find them. I just had to call. I had to send them. I had to like literally lick stamps and like lick envelopes and like mail them out like these letters that like come to our seminar and learn
Can
about.
Can you please like run through a phone call if someone actually answered a number that they don't have, like what would you say? Like pretend you're calling me. Hey, what's up?
Hey Sarah, I was wondering, you know, you have that account with the,
who is this?
Honestly, like it was so bad, like so it wouldn't go like that awkward. Like at first, like you would be, you know, trying to talk to them for a little bit, but I don't even remember. This was 6 years ago, but I remember that if I did get through to them, because it was usually their secretary. So it would just be like, hey, this is Brett from Morgan Stanley. I represent Rich Sepulveda. Okay. And then from there, if we could get to them, then I would have to like pass it on to them.
Gotcha.
So I was kind of just like, they're like, hey, are you interested in working with us and stuff like that? But they would normally be working with a different investment bank.
Right.
So I would have to like steal them.
Oh, so you actually successfully did that a few times?
No. I mean, I would get a hold of them. A couple times a day, but like I don't think we ended up, I was so not motivated.
Well, and you would think once you're at the point, if you have $2 million in assets, you probably already have someone who's working with you. It's interesting they didn't, I don't know, maybe lower the bar a little bit. And that's fascinating. Okay, I'm so sorry I spent so much time on the subject.
Do you want to invest? I know a guy. I think I'll still get my commission. Anyone listening, you know, I'm just kidding. I would never.
Hit up Brett's info in the description below and he'll help you invest your money today. Yes. How do you do your own investing?
You know what? This is the first year that I started investing. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about this a little bit briefly.
Like,
you know, we did for retirement, but now it's more, I want to buy an apartment probably before, you know, by the time I'm 30. So putting money away towards that, just because I was leaving all my money in a checking account.
Mm-hmm.
So it was no interest, nothing. Yeah. And with inflation, you're pretty much losing money.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started putting money even just in mutual funds, safe stuff, and then like
money market accounts.
Yeah, even some more aggressive growth. Yeah. But for the most part, now I'm starting to put a lot of my money into investments. Yeah.
What is your ideal condo in New York City? Because I think about this all the time. And
yeah, you're always posting photos of like cool little houses and
every other
townhouses.
Yeah, every other week I jump back. I'm like, this is so dumb buying in the city. Why would I ever do this when the apartments that would be good for me that are on par with what I'm renting start at 1.5? And then the next week I'll be like, oh my gosh, it would be so fun to buy something, maybe renovate it, you know, and then I'll flip on, do I want a penthouse in like a condo building or do I want like a 5-floor walk up?
You know
it's
what?
So
you're giving me ideas right now. All right, when I buy something, I'm just going to turn that into the new series on my YouTube channel, like renovating my new apartment.
And that's the thing. People love that
they
stuff.
They do.
They love it.
We both
and it's
know
so
that people love anything apartment in New York City.
Well, because I sit there and watch those videos, whether it's our homie Eric or freaking, what's their name? The Waco people on HGTV. Oh my gosh, they have like an empire.
Oh,
Joanna Gaines and something else Gaines. Fun fact, that dude went to my high school, along with
Post Malone. Yeah,
and
you
Demi
showed
Lovato.
Me the photo of Post Malone in the yearbook.
Chip Gaines. That's Chip Gaines.
Okay.
So they flip houses in Waco, Texas, and it's the most dinky little town, and they've turned it into this like flourishing economy with their own shops and stuff. And but I love that stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely love that stuff. Now, I don't know if you pay attention to the market in New York City to buy. It's the best time to buy right now. It's a buyer's market.
Yeah. I think everyone's waiting for more of like an overall market crash to actually, but I think it's because everyone's waiting. No one's buying. So the prices are lowering. And that's what I noticed when I was looking at condos in Midtown. Just the very basic, nothing fancy, one bedroom, two bedroom, and just like a average big building. They are going back to the prices of what they were in like 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, you could get like a one bedroom for $400,000 in like Midtown.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, what are you looking at?
You would need to renovate it.
Right.
There's no doorman, buildings like that in
See,
that price
yeah,
range.
I feel like I would need a doorman.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You're a doorman type of girl.
I am a doorman type of girl. That's why I'm obsessed with all of these 4 and 5 floor walk ups, like in Brooklyn. They're so beautiful. You know, having that much space, if it's a two family, maybe you could like rent it out or something, but then you don't have the views.
That's true.
I'm obsessed with the views.
You cannot have everything in New York unless you're making $10 million a year.
I know. I know. Okay. Well, we'll circle back around when we both have our apartments and it'll be so much fun.
Next podcast, we'll be talking about our mansions and townhouses.
20 years.
Hey, have more faith in us. Let's say like 2 or 3.
Let's invest that money, Brett. Let's get it. Let's let it build. The past year has been great in terms of stocks going up and stuff. Everyone said, oh, it's going to crash. Pull your money out.
It just keeps going up. No one knows.
And that's what my shout out to my financial advisor person. I'm not super involved, but every year when it's time to contribute because of taxes and blah, 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 and like maxing out your SEP or IRA.
Yep.
Always I'm like, are you sure I should put that much in? Like, aren't things about to crash and blow? He's like, he tells me the same thing every time. Like, Sarah, you're young, in your lifetime it'll go up and down probably three different times.
If it crashes, we're not gonna sell for
exactly
20 years or you know, a couple years. So look at 2008, 2009, it went down, but then
yeah, just put it in
it was up.
And don't look at it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's it.
Anyways,
we're in a good place, don't worry.
Yeah. So I love that you were there in a space where you were like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. What else can I do? That's when you started building the Fortune website.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of what I have today came from, is when I was bored out of my mind. I hated my life in college, and I was in the when I was still going to classes. I was in the back of my circuits 101 class, basically coming up with YouTube ideas and ordering new cameras and all of that stuff. And so tell me a little bit about Fortune, and I guess you got to a point where you were really good at skating, but what was your relationships with other companies at that point?
Yeah, so the reason why I didn't pursue skateboarding, what happened was I got hurt. I tore a ligament in my ankle. So everything was going so well.
Like at your peak.
Yeah, definitely at my peak. Like I just felt like something was happening soon. Like a lot of people were talking about me. I was like getting hit up by different companies, and then I tore a ligament in my ankle doing just like a stupid trick, just not thinking. And I thought it was fine, and I kept skateboarding on it because like I was literally jumping off something about like 3 feet high when I'm used to jumping off things that were, you know, overhead high, grinding handrails. And a little thing happened, so I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna skate through it. I'm a man, I can, you know, this is nothing. And then after a couple days of that, it just made it so worse, and I could barely walk for like a couple weeks after that. Like after I kept skating on it and having a little more, a couple injuries, I was like, shit, every step I take, I'm in pain. And then that took about 6 months to fully heal.
Wow.
But during that 6 months is
which in the skateboarding world is a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And
especially when you have the buzz.
Yeah. So it's just like, that's it. It's over. What am I going to do? But I thought positively. I wanted to use my time wisely and productively. So that's when I got my grandma's sewing machine. And my grandfather was president of a textile company, so I had all these cool textiles and prints, and I just started making pocket t-shirts and hats, beanies, anything I could make out of my dorm room, and was selling to them to kids on campus and to small skate shops. And
so you weren't just printing a logo on a t-shirt, but you were in
there
sewing.
Yeah.
You were literally sewing materials onto t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And how long would that take?
You know, some of them were
like one pocket
super
tee.
Intricate. So I wasn't even just doing pocket tee. So I was doing, and had a pocket. I would even rip off the sleeves and sew a pattern on, like,
wow.
Take fabric and make sleeves there. So if someone would order that on the website for $25, I'm like, say I got one order, I'll be like, dang, I can't go out this weekend because I have to sew that one shirt for $25. But I loved it, and it was the excitement. It was around the time when the Facebook movie came out, and I wanted that so badly, where he had this passionate idea and wanted to work on it all night.
Yeah.
And like order pizza, you know, like that stereotypical entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted.
Just,
and I
the
finally
laser
had
focus.
That. Yeah. I finally had that, so I didn't care. I just like dedicated.
So how were you getting orders?
Like I said, I had a little bit of buzz from skateboarding, so it was more through that and just like hooking up other skateboarders and spreading the word that way. And this was before the time. This was like probably 2 years before everyone had a clothing line. Maybe even 3 years.
Okay.
So it was like,
so you're
whoa,
ahead of your time.
At that time, it was like, you're starting a company. Now, if you're starting t-shirts, like, you're just slinging t-shirts and hustling.
Right.
But it was like, no, like, this is like a big deal, I guess, to people. Yeah. And there weren't many.
And it was Fortune at the time. That was the brand.
It was Fortune Headwear. Even though it started off as just headwear, because that's all I could really make easily. And then like a couple months later, not even, maybe like 2 months later, I was like, oh, I'm starting making t-shirts and stuff like that.
Well, I think that's, you did something when it wasn't what everyone was doing. And I think when you're coming into a space, you have a little bit of influence. Nowadays, you could, you know, do merch, sell some t-shirts, but everyone's doing that.
Yeah.
So it either has to be insanely unique, or it's probably just smarter to find another way to monetize. Because people who are actually super passionate about that, they're gonna beat you out anyways. I mean, you were literally sewing shirts, and it was unique. It wasn't just slapping logos on a t-shirt that anyone could do and then selling it. And so you had both those things. You had something that was a unique product, and you were before everyone else, because, you know, seeing the skate landscape, everyone has their own company.
Yep, exactly.
And in reality, that just means they're printing some logos
exactly.
on 20 t-shirts.
Yeah, now they make it so easy too. You could literally make a design in 5 minutes getting on a t-shirt.
So how did it escalate to the point today? Like, bring me through all of the little points.
Right, I'll try and do it
in
a nutshell.
Yeah.
Went to college, was selling it to small skate shops, and that was my senior year where it really started, like, could make like a couple $100 a month from it. Mm-hmm. And
So how did you first get into skate shops? Because that alone is a pretty big accomplishment.
So what I would do was I mapped out all the skate shops in the Northeast, and I would find what skateboarders rode for that skate shop. Because every skate shop has like a little team of the locals that they hook up. So I made a connection with at least one of the riders for those skate shops. I would hook them up. So I remember there's a skate shop in New Jersey, and I hooked up a rider named Peter. And Peter was rocking it all the time into the skate shop that he rode for in his town. And then this was all my master plan, but the owner was like, oh, Fortune, like, what's that, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, give him my business card and tell him to hit us up. It's like,
so
perfect, it worked.
So the owners were starting to see it.
Yeah, so I wasn't even hitting them up. It was more like, all right, I'm going to get in their eyes somehow through their riders who are my friends. And I get to hook up these kids. And
using your community.
Yeah, so like they're hyped to get free products and rep something.
And something, a little side note, you know, skateboarding community is so, if you give someone a t-shirt, there are already people that unfortunately don't get paid a lot. So if you take the step to just give away a $20 t-shirt, you would be surprised how much love that you actually get back.
True.
You know, it's, you know, sending a t-shirt to a popular YouTuber might not have a lot of impact, but if you find those people who maybe they just got an audience, or they are more in a small niche,
that's
like
the dream when you're starting as a YouTuber or in any industry, you're like, you want to have someone, you know, give you the credit that you want.
So if you can recognize people who have newly found audiences who are maybe in these more specific niches that don't have a huge audience, but they have a dedicated one, that's when, if you're sending out PR packages or, you know, you want more eyes on your brand, those are the people who can actually, I think, really represent you in like a pure way, because they're just stoked. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I bet those skaters were like, oh, Brett, you know, you're a homie, but also you're making good stuff that looked good. The owners.
So I'd get them in these small skate shops.
Yeah.
And it
how many units, like, per skate shop would you give?
Not that many. Like, if a skate shop ordered, like, $300 to $500, like, that was good. But then there were some. There was a shop, Blades, which is right up Broadway from here. Yeah. Like, I remember they gave me my first order for over $1,000. And I was like, whoa. All right. Now, after that, I had full faith in myself. I was like, if I could just get a couple more of these, I could make a living off of this and continue it to grow.
And I'm curious, what were the, when you have like a $1,000 order, how much are they paying for each shirt? And like, how much is their markup?
Yeah. So it depends on the store. Since they're in New York City, they would sell the shirts for $35. Okay. And I would sell it to them for $15.
Oh, wow.
So they have like about 55% margins.
And then it would take...
And for me, it would cost like not even, yeah. Because at that point, I was getting more and more orders. It was in more stores. I had the online. I wasn't sewing everything really at this point, some stuff. So I had pretty good margins and ordering good volume. So yeah, it would cost like $6.50 to make a t-shirt.
So everyone's making a decent amount.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I had good margins and online I was making like decent money. So that's when I really believed in myself and then got like my first tiny apartment in Chinatown.
Love it.
Yeah.
And when did Zoomies happen? Because it's very cool, guys. If you go into Zoomies today, Fortune is in there.
Yeah, we got skateboards. We have a whole line. You've been in there and bought a shirt,
yes,
I remember.
Yes, I freaking love it. Anytime we go to... It sounds like, oh gosh, I'm going to shame John and be like, oh, we go to Zoomies all the time. We don't go all the time. But when we do, it is so cool to see Fortune, you know, right in the center of Zoomies, because that's so, that really has become, especially young kids' skate shop, because so many skate shops are going out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, you can hate them all you want because they're corporate and blah, 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 but that really has become a hub for kids who are passionate about that stuff. So it's cool to see Fortune right next to Rip and Dip, right next to Teddy Fresh.
Yep.
I mean, that's huge, Brett. That's so cool.
You know what's funny? So going back to how, you know, I had that mastermind plan to get into those small skate shops. Same thing happened with Zoomies.
Really?
You know my buddy Dylan Collins, the artist?
Yes.
So Dylan was working at Zoomies.
Okay.
And I told myself, I was like, all right, how can I actually make this a sustainable company? How can I grow this? I was like, I need to get into Zoomies. Yeah. How do I do that? Dylan worked at Zoomies. He got me a job at Zoomies. I worked at Zoomies for 2 weeks and I met the manager. Same thing. Like, I had that idea in my mind. I was like, all right, I need to meet the right people and get it
So you were just like a person on the floor?
Yeah, I was
like,
selling stuff at Union Square.
Wow. And when was this?
This wasn't even long ago. This was like, 4 years ago.
Okay.
So not too long ago. And then same thing. I didn't even ask to get it in. That the manager, he already knew what Fortune was at this point. I was doing it for about 2 years and he was a skater. So he was the manager of like the region. And he was like, hey, like the buyers always ask me about like companies to get, you know, into the store. What I think is cool. Like, do you mind if I tell him about Fortune? It's like, no, I would not mind at all.
Wow.
And he did. I emailed with the buyer at their headquarters in Seattle. And he was like, hey, like, we'd love to give this a try. But do you think that you can, you know, you can make and manufacture the volume that we would like to order?
Because that's a lot of people call that the hug of death.
Yeah.
When you get so much volume and you're not prepared for it, it could actually put you out of business.
It's true. Luckily, it wasn't like, like tens of thousands of units. They put it in 5 stores to test it.
Okay.
And they even were like, do you have enough funds to like create this? I was like, yes, like I'm so serious about this. Like I just quit the job at, I literally quit right away. I worked for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And once I had that connect, I'm like, all right, I'm done here.
So 5 stores in New York or New York State?
So that was still good. It was like, I mean, I don't mind saying it was like $7,000 order.
Amazing.
So at that time I'm like, and it was still at least I had 50% profit margins.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I made a solid, like, almost $4,000.
Yeah, amazing.
At that time, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
At this point, it's still just you, right?
Yeah, it was just me. I was, like, 22, 23.
So, I'm so fascinated by this. When you're having these conversations with people heading up Zoom, like, being a buyer for Zoomies is pretty significant. And when you're a 20-year-old, 22-year-old having these conversations... Were you nervous at all, or were you prepared?
So we would have phone calls and stuff, and I've met him in person before. I honestly have worked with like 3 different buyers now, and they have different ones for like shirts, hats, shoes, everything that you can think of. And I remember being like, I don't want him to meet me, or if he does, I want to make sure my beard is grown out because I don't want him to see me as this 22-year-old kid. I swear to God, I would think that because I was like, I don't want him to like, like, all right, who's this 22-year-old that
because
we're giving all these orders
thing
to?
I mean, that is so real. I remember, I mean, luckily being 25 now, I don't think it's as significant, but I remember in high school when I would play in, you know, my church band, and I would be band leading. So leading the band, talking in their in ears, you know, stuff like that. That when new band members would come in and they would see this high schooler, it would be like, what? Like, who is this like 14-year-old chick telling me what to do? I mean, that was a much different environment.
What instrument did you play?
Real electric guitar. So yeah, you know, I would be lead or rhythm depending on the weekend, and I would have to know, and it, gosh, when a leader gives you that type of responsibility and you really are learning as you go, right? I think that's how I've been able to just excel in so many things in life, because I take on things that really I don't know how to take on, but you learn. Mm-hmm. When you're in it, I'm sure during that moment you're like, I don't know how to get $7,000 of orders in, but I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna mm-hmm. figure it out. You're gonna learn along the way, and then it just helps you so much later on in life when you're like, okay, let's take this YouTube thing seriously, and you jump right in and look at you now. Yeah. And so for that first meeting, how did it go? Did you grow the beard?
Yeah, like try to grow it out as best as I could. Luckily, I'm Italian, so it grows very quickly. I had that 5 o'clock shadow ready by the end of the day.
Love it.
And yeah, it went super well, and he was really cool. But I only ended up working with that buyer for like 2 more months, and then I got switched over to another one.
And gosh, maintaining those relationships, because yes, it's one person,
no,
right?
Yeah, it is tough, but they obviously like will put in a good word if they like gotcha. You. But I've been working with the same one for like 2+ years now, and he watches the vlogs. He'll like text me after like a good video goes up. I'm like, dude, that was sick.
Yeah.
Like he skates, he snowboards, so it makes it so much easier, and I'm glad that he like knows my YouTube
yeah.
grind. That, like,
and it's, I mean, it's so cool to have an actual skater have your brand in a place like Zoomies, because I mean, you're pretty chill, you don't get into the drama, but as a person who sees from the outside, I think there's some feelings for the skateboard community when the biggest brands and what should be a skate shop are from YouTubers like PewDiePie and mm-hmm. H3H3 and Rip and Dip, I guess, started from a yeah, core skateboarder, but mm-hmm. Have you found yourself in the middle of any of those, just any of the weirdness in skateboarding? It seems like you kind of stay out of it.
And I think that I built enough credibility
yeah.
in the beginning. Obviously now, like, there's newer kids, there's people who never heard of me. Not that, you know, I was ever the biggest skateboarder,
yeah, yeah.
but even now I have a business partner, Manny Santiago, right. who's, you know, X Games gold medalist and is one of the best skateboarders and has a great reputation. So I think just making the smart moves with the brands, people will respect that. And I think that just having the respect from people in the beginning as a skateboarder, yeah. they know that I am like
it
a core dude.
It laid that foundation.
Yeah,
because I wonder now when you're making so many YouTube videos, you're not necessarily skating in every single one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not at all.
You know,
my audience, so many of them probably have no idea that yeah. I was this skateboarder in my previous
yeah.
life.
And well, I'm sure a few skateboarders see you and are like, you know, who's this dude? And then, you know, maybe it takes a clip of you skating to be like, oh, okay, wait, he's legit. Okay.
Yeah, that happens all the time. I just made a video recently called like 3 minutes in New York City. It was like this cinematic film storytelling, and there's like one shot of skateboarding. I grind like this 10-stair handrail, and people were like, was
that
you?
Did
was that Adobe Premiere? Or like, how did you do that? It's like, no, I can so get it down still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, from, it's so funny when John sees your clips, he's like, what the heck? You know, sometimes you forget that you're so good, because you do so many different things. But I think that's what
Thank
a lot
you.
Of people, of course, and I think that's what a lot of people lack, is they try to start the social media thing and they don't have a thing.
Yeah. That was my thing when I first started. Yeah. I used to do vlogs like same time John was doing.
Yeah.
He was doing it before me. And
it helps to have something
success,
that you're
yeah,
passionate about.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So whether it's, yeah, tech, a city, mm-hmm. travel, whatever it is, like yeah. that's the only way to really grow in 2020. Unless you have this
totally.
Insane personality and can get 16-year-old people to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you're trying to build an adult audience, there has to be that one thing.
Exactly. And that's how you build something that lasts as well. If you're just hopping on trends, you might be hot for a year or two, but then you don't have anything to sustain it. You don't have anything to relate with people. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning with me, it was just storytelling. I was like obsessed with telling other people's stories.
Yeah.
And now it's obviously evolved more into tech and stuff, but
and you can do stuff like that once you have an audience, you know.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
Like I guess you say both of us now, we have this core audience, the Peachy fam,
yep,
that will
represent.
Watch any video that you mm-hmm. post. So even sometimes now there's just like, that's not so aligned with my channel. Like it kind of is. It's storytelling. It's like a more personal video, but I know people will appreciate this video that are like the core fans.
Right.
And I think I relate that back to what you said in your video, which is one for me, one for them. And I say that all the time in my head where I'm like, all right, this video is like a top 10 travel destination video for 2020. Like it'll be cool to make, but it's not a diehard Brett video.
I want to. Yeah. You have to find that balance. So how many stores are you in now?
With Fortune, we're in over 100 Zumi stores now.
Wow.
Yeah. And especially the skateboards really helped that.
When did you decide to bring on Manny Santiago? And then how did you know that was the right thing to do? Start boards. Cause it was just close in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I guess, more of a creative audience. So it's not, people don't. No, it's not common knowledge. Skateboarding isn't common knowledge that when you become a pro, you get your own skateboard deck and it says your name, and that's a big deal. And so if you decide to make decks, you know, people assume you're going to have riders. So that's not a small adventure.
Yeah. No, it's such an overhead to start a skateboard company. Like insane. Like you really have to love it because there's not much money in skateboards, to be honest. Obviously there are some companies, like I love what Revive John's skateboard company does with online sales and stuff, but I was still doing the clothing. This was about 2.5 years ago. I was skateboarding so much at this time. Now I still do it, but I don't like post it on social media really. I do it just for myself. But at this time that was like making videos about it, living, breathing Fortune and skateboarding. And I never really thought to do skateboards because of the whole margins thing. They're so expensive to make and you have to pay riders and have a warehouse and to ship them. They're so expensive and heavy. But Manny Santiago, we were skateboarding a lot. He was living in New York for a little bit. And he came to me one day at the skate park. He's like, dude, like, I love Fortune. And he literally told me, he's like, I passed the skate park LES in Chinatown. He's like, I passed by a Chinese restaurant called like Fortune Chinese food or something like that. And he's like, I kind of have this epiphany that we're going to do like Fortune skateboards. Hmm. And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. Next day, he comes to me with graphic ideas that he drew out. And he's like,
I wasn't joking, bro. Let's go.
Yeah, he's like, this is what I think for the first line. This is what I think for the second line. And then like from there, I was like, oh shit, like you're serious. Yeah. Like I never thought to actually launch skateboards. And then like we met a bunch of times just like talking over like who would be on the team? How are we going to fund it? Who are we going to pay? Like where are we going to warehouse them? And after we had an answer to every single question I had, I was like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Let's go into business. And it's been a roller coaster and an amazing ride ever since. Yeah. You know, like we had riders that we had that we've had to kick off and, you know, like a lot of things like that with running a company that you have to do. But it's been such a fun ride and it's cool to still be intact with the skateboarding community by owning a skateboard and a skateboard company and also hooking up these riders and, you know, help. Yeah.
Who's writing for Fortune right now?
Yeah, so we have, as you know, the girl Rochelle Van Burke, who's also, which is cool about her, she's an actress as well, just starred in the movie The Skate Kitchen.
She's huge.
Yeah, killing. She has an HBO show coming out soon.
Crazy. You did well with that pick.
Yeah, she's from my little town in Long Island.
Wow.
I taught her how to like ollie and board slide.
Oh, so y'all go back.
We go back.
Wow. And to have that insight too.
Yeah.
Of, because running a skateboard brand, it's not just about, you know, skill is obviously one thing, but nowadays
it's just your image.
You gotta have an image. You gotta like connect with people, and she sure does that.
Yeah, so we've dominated with the female skateboarding community just because of her, and like a lot of our graphics are, even Manny's like a huge feminist. Like he's all about women's rights, and a lot of our graphics have to do with that, and just like, you know, human equality. So that resonates well with our audience that I don't see any other skateboard brand doing. And because of that, yeah, like I always see our online orders are always from a lot of, not all of them, but I would say close to 50% are from females, which is huge.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah,
and inspiring a new generation to get out and skate because it's still lacking in the female side.
It's true. Yeah. And then we have a couple other riders in LA. So Manny has a house that he owns in California, in Los Angeles, and has a cement skate park in the backyard.
It's crazy.
And everyone in the house either like helps work for Fortune or rides for Fortune. So it's cool that there's like this whole operation out there, and I can be out here.
I forgot his name. I feel like I told you this. My Uber driver in LA was Am for you guys.
Yeah, well, Dave.
Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's him.
Yeah, and he
him.
Lived at that house.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. It was so funny. He was driving me from the airport or somewhere, and we somehow got to talking, and I brought up John. He's like, I know John. What? And you're what? And then he started, it wasn't until the end of the conversation that he mentioned Fortune. I was like, Fortune, that's Brett. He's the homie. What? Such a small world.
That is such a small world.
I got him to drive through Chick-fil-A so someone who we hook, get food.
Oh, no way. Shout out to Dave. Yeah, someone who we hook up with was her Uber driver.
Okay, listen. I've never asked an Uber driver to go through a drive-through for me, but I'm starving.
And he did it.
Can you go through Chick-fil-A? I'll buy you some food. It's such a small world. It's so funny. Well, I mean, that's amazing. Congrats on everything. And I mean, I feel like you guys are just starting. And like you said, having a skateboarding brand is tough because especially when you're reaching an audience that doesn't have a lot of money to begin with.
That's the thing. Everyone wants stuff for free. I mean, there's obviously other industries and communities like that. But with skateboarders, there's like, oh, how can I get free products? Yeah. Just like, you could buy it and support.
So how do you balance that reaching out beyond the skateboarding community to market your brand as something cool that you should wear regardless, and then also hooking people up?
Yeah, that is an interesting question, and kind of just go off of like, yeah, obviously having like the more elite people wearing it that like I think is cool, that we want to represent the brand. But even going into 2020, I'm going to be going more, I'm not going to be showing behind the scenes, but I'm going to be relating Fortune more as merch.
I think
because
that's smart.
The name Fortune came from wanting to help the less fortunate.
Right.
And I was riding a subway back in college and it was negative 10 degrees out and there were all these homeless individuals out on the streets. So I made these shirts and all the profits I gave to give back to the homeless.
Cool.
So we were putting homeless people up in shelters and in hostels and like cheap hotels throughout Brooklyn.
Wow.
So that's where it came from, and we're still today, we do a lot with that.
Yeah.
And even more so with my YouTube channel, I'm going to be doing more just videos about things that I believe in that I think need more attention and help in, like Cambodia. You know, there's a lot going on there, and my stepmom's from there, so a lot of the proceeds from future collections are going to be like giving back to
these
underprivileged communities.
Yeah, well, because you have such a strong audience on social media.
You.
So I don't see why that would be, I mean, people would be so stoked, I think. I mean, I feel like you could talk about Fortune, especially if you have those things that where it's contributing back to stuff. I mean, everyday people, I think, are just going to be so stoked for that. And the last moments, we haven't even gotten to like social media and YouTube and New York and stuff, but thank you for sharing everything about Fortune.
Yeah.
But your YouTube channel, obviously, you started way earlier than I thought. I did not know you were posting video parts in the beginning of YouTube, like 2006 and 7. That's insane. When did it become something that you saw as, hey, wait, I could do this for money?
Yeah.
Were you consistently posting skate parts from the beginning? Or when did it kind of transition to more mainstream content, I guess?
Yeah. So I remember I was just posting like stupid videos as a little kid, like these skateboard videos. Even I remember I had a video of my cousin Chad falling hard on a skateboard. And I think I was like 13 years old and I called it like Death of Chad. Not thinking that anyone would see it, but us too. And that video has 100,000, I privated it now, but it has 100,000 views.
Wow.
And I remember I made some money off of that as like a, you know,
it's
maybe like 15 at the time when it's like it started making money. And I was like, whoa. You can make money from this YouTube thing by posting videos. So I always had in the back of my mind throughout college and wherever, I was like, it would be so cool to make money from YouTube. Like, I feel like I could do it. And then once I was living in the city and I had Fortune making a little bit of income, it was still like every month, like I have to pay my rent, I have to pay all my bills. But Fortune was funding my dream for YouTube, where a lot of YouTubers in New York, it's hard for them to start because either they have a full-time job or they don't have the funds. So I had the time because I was running my own business that I could sacrifice some time to create content that could potentially grow it. So I just saw the investment aspect of it, where if I do dedicate my time and everything I know about video making, I could potentially turn this into something. But obviously, probably when you started too, it was a dream, but it was still so far-fetched.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was possible still. But I didn't care. I was having fun. I was making like,
well, and you were taking what your, because Fortune started as a side hustle and then it became your main hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take that and you funnel it into a new thing. And
exactly.
I think people wait for the perfect time to start things. Like, oh, wait, I have to quit cold turkey my job. Well, no, like having that income from your job is actually great because you don't have to put the pressure of earning money off of YouTube. And mm-hmm. then you can have fun with it. And usually when you're having fun with something and you're just doing what you want, that's when that catches steam. And then you can do a little less work, pour more time into YouTube, and then YouTube becomes the main thing.
That's
and then
exactly
when
it.
That becomes the main thing, you can start putting it into something else, right?
No, yeah. Totally. Because even now, I haven't taken money out of the Fortune account in over a year.
Yeah.
Now it's just, I mean, from YouTube, it's...
That's awesome. And then that can go straight back into that company and build, yeah, build. And
exactly.
then that'll be, you know, in the next 10 years, it'll be bigger than you could ever imagine.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah, that's so cool. So what travels are coming up? Because your YouTube channel is epic and that you go all over the place. I thought I traveled a lot, but Brett, holy smokes.
Yeah, so it started off as like the skateboarding stuff. And yeah. then I think I was so inspired by Fun for Louie.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Everyone. Yeah.
Love
I think a
Louis.
Lot of...
Literally a pioneer.
A lot of YouTubers now who are making stuff, I think, are inspired by it. Very few individuals, Fun for Louie, Casey Neistat, mm-hmm. me, I was obsessed with Jack Scab. Did you watch them?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, they did like the rickshaw run
yep.
and stuff.
Yep.
Like, I was
and they had
so
all of them
obsessed.
Too.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Totally. So that's exactly what inspired me, where I was like, well, this guy's traveling the world, making YouTube yeah. videos and can fund his travels by doing this. So that was the goal. It's like, I want to be able to at least go on trips and not have to like pay for them, or at least have my YouTube channel fund it.
Yeah.
And now it's succeeded that, where now I'm making a successful income. I pay for my friends to travel with me to yeah. help me film, and
awesome.
It's definitely gone further than I thought, but I'm loving every moment of it. Mm-hmm. And I am going next back to Southeast Asia, and yeah, I'll probably be gone for all of winter. So I'll see
That'll
you in
good.
March.
Yeah, see you in a couple months. What about Southeast Asia? That, because I think a lot of people will see that. I feel like it's easier to like travel to Europe than yeah. it is Southeast Asia, where maybe it's, you know, longer flight times, more of a language barrier. What would be some words of encouragement to people who are maybe thinking about it, but maybe it's just a little scary?
Yeah, I think that's what's so fun about it is I remember the first time I went to Thailand and it just felt like a different planet out there. You know, it's different currency. Not everyone speaks English. The food is so different. There's these limestone rocks with beautiful water. It's so exotic. And I thought that was so cool, just to like put myself in the situation like, whoa, I don't know where I am. I don't know what language to speak or like how to buy anything. But it was that excitement and that part of the adventure of the unknown.
And you survived. Look
yeah,
at you now.
Exactly.
You
and
survived.
Now it's like, I feel like I need to go to Mars to like get some adventure now, because I've been like all these places I always dreamt of, but yeah. of course there's always more places to go.
Right, right. So what would be that last dream place? Because you have been to so many places.
That is a great, great question. And I've never been to Brazil, and that's such a massive country.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to dedicate a lot of time there.
Yeah.
But I've only been to Beijing in China, and I would love to go into like the mountains and just get like so lost
yeah.
in there and just... Yeah. Try and find a way. I need to get like Craig Adams and we'll go on a hike or something.
That, talk about a pivot.
Yeah.
That's like all his channel is now, which
you
is
know
really.
That he came to Asia twice when I was there last winter. Like,
really?
I told him I was going to Thailand. I sent him my flights. He came to Thailand, spent like 3 days with me, and then like
Did
went back home.
Did he make a video about it?
Yeah, he made a video. Okay. He made like two videos, went back home, and then I went to Bali from there. This was still one trip for me. He came to Bali for like three more days. And he was like, all right, I'm going back to New York, and then just like left. Guy so just does
Craig.
Whatever he wants, and I love it.
Classic Craig.
I love that guy.
That is so funny. Okay, wrapping things up. What's maybe a word of encouragement you can give to people, not just about travel, but living their best creative life? You are the definition of, you know,
life.
A creative entrepreneur who saw, hey, I don't want to do this finance thing. I don't want to live my life for someone else. This is the worst. And you kind of forge your own path. And I think a lot of people find themselves stuck. And they want to do something similar.
Yeah.
What would be one nugget to get someone to just start?
That is a great question. And what comes from my gut and the first instinct is, even what I think about now with YouTube and stuff, is like I would literally die trying to make this successful, or at least to a self-sustaining point. Obviously, now it is where I want to grow this even more. But I would do anything to make sure I could live my passion. And if you are passionate enough, or that's the same for you, then you'll make it happen.
Yeah.
And there's no reason not to doubt yourself. Even now, if there was a new venture I wanted to pursue, I have so much confidence in myself that I could do anything. Mm. I feel like you have that same thing too, where you're like, I have a not that Midas touch, but almost just this determination where I won't let anything stop me.
And it's the feeling of knowing what the alternative is.
Yep.
Because you felt that. You've mm-hmm. tasted what the alternative is. And exactly. Oh my gosh, it's the worst. So I don't care if I'm living in a rat-filled apartment, but if I'm living my dream, then hey, that's much better than being miserable as an electrical engineer or yep. something like that.
So you die know? Trying.
Exactly. And so if you don't find that same oomph for life or just desperation, honestly, it was at a point where it was desperation. I was like, anything other than this, somebody, let's go, you know? And if maybe you don't feel that, maybe you're fine. Maybe like doing yeah. your 9 to 5 is what you're
Some
meant to do.
Some people like it.
And then you just have you have what you're passionate about, your hobby, and that's what you do after 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And then that's your life, and it's good.
Yeah, we were all made differently. Exactly. Some people have that in them to like want to do their own thing, yeah. but some people are happier mm-hmm. with that, you know, routine life and yeah. having a good boss and people that they like working yeah. with love
and
it.
And that's
so
okay.
That is okay.
That's okay. But to the people who are just dying inside, try. Take the step because it's worth it. I think that we both know what it feels like to just hate what we're doing.
One more piece of advice.
Yes.
Never be afraid to email or DM someone mm-hmm. and email people every single day that you aspire to be. I wouldn't be sitting here right now if I didn't yeah. email Sarah like 3 or 4 years ago when she yeah. first moved to New York and she invited me to some event. Now look at us. We're
look
two
at
friends
us now.
Hanging out doing a podcast.
Exactly.
Even my so true. Assistant Chris, he hit me up 5 times via email and DM and yeah. gave him a shot. And now he's working for me full time.
I love that.
So I think if there's someone that you aspire to be, whether it's Sarah Dici, send them an email. You never know yeah. what could happen. She's looking for someone to help yeah. her out.
Take the step.
Yep.
You know?
Take initiative.
I love that. Brett, shout out whatever you want to shout out. YouTube, Instagram, where can people find you?
Yeah, just type in Brett Conti on YouTube. Brett Conti on Instagram, and you could also check out Fortune Skate.
Amazing. Fortuneskate.com?
Fortuneskate.com, yep.
Amazing. Brett, thank you so much for being on. You have an epic story. I'm so glad we got to chat yeah, about this. And then we'll have to do a part two.
Yes,
and
once maybe, we have our huge townhouses.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll do a part two and have so much fun on all your travels.
Thank you.
I look forward to keeping up with that. And thank you everyone for listening. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Hit that subscribe button so you get new podcasts every single Monday. We're getting back into a routine over here. So I'm trying to still post on Monday mornings. You know, Christmas break gets got a little sketchy there, yeah, but I'm
need some time off.
I'm back on the schedule. And thank you guys so much. Follow That Creative Life on Twitter and Instagram. Links are in the description below. Have an epic week. Brett, thank you.
Thank you, Sarah Peachy.
Toodles.